This is a story of loss and the life thereafter. This is my story. Losing my mother when I was 7 changed everything. For me, my brother, my sister, it changed all of us in development, emotionally, and in many other ways that you might expect. It affected us financially. But what was not expected, what was weird and awful to me, was what happened to me physically, or maybe what didn't happen. From about age 7 to about age 17, I essentially did not grow. I did, of course, older and eventually normalized and grew. I became an attorney, a federal prosecutor, and handled some cases that you've heard of. Those cases were famous or infamous, depending on who you talk with. And maybe for me, I'm the same, famous or infamous, depending on who you talk with. I believe that bad things, big bad things in our life, remain as a shadow which follows us. Only when we stop and look back at that shadow and deal with it can we move on. After all, it's just a shadow. I look forward to having you with me in this series. To the listener, I guess I need to apologize, but not really. I imagine that the first 2 episodes you may have found depressing or troubling in nature. And that's the way it was, but there was love and humor, and there were better notions to be found. So I'll talk about those a bit, but before I leave the gray and enchanted area, listen to this weird deal. This is just odd, but I don't make anything of it. So you know by now, if you've listened to the first 2 episodes, that when I was 7 years old, my mom died. And you know that my dad's mother, so my grandmother, came to live with us after some time, and my grandparents, they had moved from about 3 hours away to help look after us. So my grandmother, the one who was looking after me, her mom died in childbirth. My grandmother was 75 when she came to help us, so it was a long, long time ago, even back then. But her mom died in childbirth with her. Then when she was 7, her father was killed in an accident, so she was orphaned when she was 7. And then my father, her son, my father, when he was 7, he and another little boy were up in a mulberry tree, which they had climbed, and my dad was up high, and he started to fall. So he grabbed the nearest thing he could find. It was a line he grabbed to catch himself so he wouldn't fall from 10 or 12 feet. Well, what he grabbed was a 10,000-volt power line, and back then they just weren't careful about where they put such things. And it electrocuted him, and it burned his face and arm, and when he fell to the ground, he was dead. He was dead. His heart apparently only fluttered. It was tachycardia that happens sometimes with electrocution, and then you die. And so the mother of the other little boy, the other 7-year-old who was playing with my dad and climbed the tree, she heard something. She probably heard a pop or something when my dad was electrocuted, and she made a pitcher of water. She had already made a pitcher of water with chipped up ice, so it was super cold. And she ran out with it and instinctively, somehow, maybe to put him out, because I'm sure he was still kind of burning on his face and hands, she poured the icy water on him, and it started his heart. It put his heart back in rhythm, and it saved him. I wondered about that story until someone very close to me had tachycardia, and they actually dipped her in a vat of ice water to regulate her heart, to get her heart back on rhythm. So I guess that's what happened. His index finger, my dad's, was burned off, and it disfigured his thumb, and none of those things looked strange to me. He was my dad, and that was his hand, and that's the way a hand was supposed to look as far as I was concerned. Regarding my mom, I remember several scenes and a few events in some detail. But the theme of her, I do recall. She was funny. On our coffee table was a little book from when I was little to sometime after she died. And this little book was called Mothers Are Funnier Than Children. And that was true with my mom. Many years after my mom died, in fact, it was at my dad's funeral, my mother's youngest sister told me this. So my mom had several brothers and sisters, and she and my dad were staying with a brother, just for a day or two, staying with a brother's family in Austin, Texas. This brother and his wife were a bit, someone might say a bit churchy, or better said, maybe they were a little stiff. Would someone say pious? Maybe not. Self-righteous, but you get the idea. And so my mom and dad stayed at their home one time. And my mom came to the breakfast table where the family was in a robe. But apparently if you peeked or inspected her raiment, as her sister-in-law did, you could see a hint of a negligee under her robe. You had to be looking, apparently, but this sister-in-law was looking. She wanted to inspect my mom. So my mom's first name was Nina. And so at the table, in front of the whole lot of them, my mom's sister-in-law said to her, "Now, Nina, do you think that's an appropriate way to come to the table?" And so my mom, without uttering a single word, pushed her seat back and stood up and left the table. She was gone only for a few minutes, just long enough to root around in the house, in the kids' rooms apparently, and effectuate her plan. And so she returned, walking in normal and proper fashion, wearing a full-length yellow raincoat like kids used to wear. But that's not all. She had on one of those yellow rain head coverings, you know, the kind that cover the entire head and neck, front and back. And it has a funny little yellow bill that sticks out above the eyes, I guess, keep the rain off. So that all you could see of my mom was her face. After she marched to the table so dressed, she quietly pulled out her chair and sat down, only pausing to scoot it up to the table. Then she resumed her bowl of cereal, just where she'd left off. Now the younger, cooler sister got it, and she laughed until she fell out of her chair. The offended sister-in-law did not get the satire and thanked her for properly dressing at the table. Anyway, that was my mother. That was my mother. She had a sense of humor and a way of expressing her displeasure with humor. So I've told before that for several months she was in our home dying. And I've also told you that the kids didn't know that she was really sick. They didn't tell us. And as far as I was concerned, she was just in my parents' room in bed most of the time. But during those last months, while she was in her bed, my dad and my mom's best friend would take turns giving her morphine shots to help her with the pain of the cancer, which had spread all about her body. It was probably before it got quite that bad that I would go in there where she was in the bed, I go in there to ask her something or to tell her something. Nothing important, I'm sure. But at age 7, let's talk about handwriting. You get handwriting, so they teach you, you know, when you're 6 and 7, they teach you printing. And they have a little examples above the chalkboard, and you're supposed to make your A's and B's a certain way on a certain line. So upper and lowercase printing, I was learning. So also at age 7, you see cursive writing. You see it. You can't do it, but you see it. My older sister, my brother might have had it on schoolwork, or I would see it perhaps on a letter or a card someone had written back when there were letters and cards. Well, to my 7-year-old mind, cursive might as well have been flowing Arabic, mysterious Sanskrit, or pick some other mysterious code of an ancient civilization. Cursive writing. I was fascinated and ignorant all at once. So I would go in there and ask my mom about it. She was so sweet. She tried to explain. This is the first couple times. She tried to explain and write some examples. Not good enough. So I would find paper and go get my first grade oversized pencil, and I would write cursive. Usually my missive, my great letter, was a series of loops all joined together. I believe that it was the key to effective cursive handwriting, that it never ended. It just looped together. Each whatever letter was all joined to the next. To do it right, see, you never ever pick up the pencil or other chosen writing instrument. So here I'd go. I'd write in scribble loop, let's call it, several lines of gibberish and take it to my mother to interpret. It wasn't as if I was proudly handing it to her, like showing off. Yes, there was a little bit of that, probably. I was probably proud that I'd come up with something. But it was more like I had written down something in code, that cursive code, and my mom was the only one who could break the code. And she tried. She tried. She would dutifully take my paper as if she had just received a message from the front lines, perhaps the location of the enemy bunker. And she would sit up in her bed a little and say, Then she might turn the paper sideways or upside down. Yes, that will help, I figured. It was not only in code, but I had apparently written it backwards to fool the enemy. And she seemed to take it so seriously. Let's see, she said. And I don't remember what she'd come up with. I think she came up with something, some interpretation. But I've tried to remember. I just don't remember. But it didn't really matter so much. It was that she cared so much, and she tried so hard to see if I'd lucked into an actual word, an actual letter that she could proudly show me. And she was so sick, and I never heard her complain. I do remember when I would go in there to her room, seeing bruises on her leg, and I kind of wondered about them. Apparently they were places where they had to give her shots, and I guess look for different places to give her shots so she wouldn't be so sore. But she never complained in front of me about anything. She only showed me the great attention, all of it, that she had. Thank you so much for listening to this short episode 3. Next time, I'd like to visit about the two heavy things, fear and need. And I want to talk about fear a little in this way. I'd like to talk about the idea that kids need to be secure in their thoughts about life and people as much as we can. And if they have fear, we sure don't want to justify it or verify it or make them believe it's the right emotion, the pervasive emotion. So we'll talk about that next time, and we'll start again when I'm about 7.